Gabby again for part two, just where we were where we left off for the last episode. So basically what we're trying to get into is talking about like our experience on the way back from the United States Hispanic Leadership Institute Conference, or USHLI for short. We took the Amtrak, and on the way back from the train, basically we had a run-in with Border Patrol. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So basically we were on our way back. It was around midnight, I would say, a little bit past midnight. Mm-hmm. We were on a smoke break, like we were last year, and the allotted time for that is usually 15 minutes. So the first car was where you were.
Yeah.
And do you want me to talk about that? Or
yeah, I mean, okay. So you know how we're basically like in mm-hmm. the lounge car, we're yes. doing our homework, playing Uno and yeah. all that. I was with you guys. I just got like really tired. I wanted to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. So I got up and I went back to the cart in front of it yeah. where everyone was just kind of where their assigned seats were. And I sat down. And then next thing you know, like we're still on the smoke break. And then next thing you know, like the officer comes onto the train
from the platform, from the very first cart, which is vital to the
right.
Story.
It's not like the Border Patrol came in from a different cart. Like they were mm-hmm. already investigating,
mm-hmm.
but they came off the train onto the train. Like that right. that was just weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I like notified you guys. Like I texted mm-hmm. you guys. I was like, "Yo, like this is happening."
The media's on the train. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like I don't know what you guys did back there.
So basically, I see the group me, and I go to one of our members, and I'm like, "Did you see it?" And they're like, "Are you sure? Like, you know, are you sure he's not just making fun of somebody?" I'm like, "I don't think so." And our whole demeanor changed without even saying anything. It was unconsciously gathering ourselves, even though we had nothing to be afraid of. And so while everyone else is on the train, because there are more than just our group, our 13 group of people from the Latin American Student Association that went to the conference is now going back home, we're kind of dispersed throughout a sea of other people, predominantly white, on the train, kind of minding their own business, despite the fact that these Border Patrol agents were questioning only us 13 if we were U.S. citizens. And
yeah, I remember when they freaking just came on and just looked at me, and I was like, yeah. My eyes were locked on them, just because like you hear mm-hmm. all these stories about like people that we know that have run-ins.
Yep.
And you've had run-ins yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't say, from a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah, from a young like just because you grew up in Cleveland, so I'm sure mm-hmm. they're just more around. Like
yeah.
In Lorraine, like it's very. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like Lorraine's more barren than Cleveland, I guess. Yeah. So there's less people, but. I guess the only run-in I've ever had with – I was at Lakeview Beach with my dad, and we were just talking about something
mm-hmm.
Just at the beach. And then next – we saw, like, a Border Patrol van, like, parked on the side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was standing, like, outside of his car, like, elbow on the hood of the car, just staring at us with his stupid sunglasses.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and I kept on looking back. I'm like, is he looking at us?
Uh-huh.
That's the only really run-in I've ever had. But then, you know, mm-hmm. hearing some other stuff. So –
yeah.
My eyes were locked on that Border Patrol agent came on the train,
mm-hmm.
and I was just prepared. Like, I was locked in.
Yeah.
Just if something
that,
were to happen,
mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
There
like,
was,
I was ready to go. I don't know. It was just a weird feeling, like.
Like, you were on. Like, it was like a switch.
Yes.
It was like, I know what I need to do. I've learned about this. I've educated myself on this.
Uh-huh.
And it was, like, that unsaid, like, preparedness that, like, got us to that point that we were just kind of, like, all right, let's do this. Like, let's go.
Yeah. It's kind of like that fight or flight response
exactly.
or flee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to say, like, I'm going to stand up and punch the dude in the face.
Right.
You know, I'm not
right.
saying that.
But you know how to act. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. like, if something were to happen, like, if they started harassing one of us.
Right.
And I needed to step in and create some sort of diversion, like, mm-hmm. I was ready to do that. Like,
right.
putting myself on the line,
mm-hmm.
you know, to possibly save somebody else.
Right.
You know, we all have documents to be in this country legally.
Exactly.
Like, there was nothing for us to worry about, but mm-hmm. just knowing how, the fact that they were only asking us.
Right.
And, you know?
And one important thing, that there were three Border Patrol agents asking
oh, yeah. mm-hmm.
one person at a time. So, and another important factor was they did not ask anybody else on the train. And I honestly, I was tired, but I would have rather stayed there for 2 hours for them to ask every single person than to come directly to me or to my members.
Why do you think that is? Like, why would you prefer that?
Because it would be less internalized. It would be less about like, oh, we're racially profiling because they're supposedly allowed to, than to actually be doing their jobs. If they were on there to see who was a citizen and who was not, please check everything for everyone. And then maybe I would have felt less discriminated against. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would have came back to campus with a better frame of mind saying, oh, that's just kind of what this is. Not because it's Trump's America or because of what we're living in now, because of our political and socioeconomic status as a country.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I just think all that's – yeah, I mean, like, one would think if law enforcement is to do their job and they're suspicious of a train, right, and they want to come onto the train to make sure everyone has paper. All of that – that concept just sounds so freaking stupid. Like,
then if ask everybody. If you're going to play the part, ask every
single person. So if you're going to be stupid, you know, and come onto a train and suspect someone for not having an ID on them, like – ask everybody then if there's a true suspicion of something's on the train, you know?
Yeah.
That just leads me to believe that we were targeted. Right. We don't have substantial proof that we were targeted, but like
it was
go
so
ahead
prevalent.
Go ahead tell them what you thought. Tell them what you saw or what you saw rather.
So in the second car in the lounge, it was just the members after the Toledo stop happened right before where other members on the train or other people on the train left, and so it was just our group. And then prior to the agents actually coming onto the platform, there was one, like, spectator, I guess you could call them.
spectator. Like we're sports.
Right, because I feel like to them we were a sport that they were watching. Like, we were just a spectacle.
Yeah.
And so just to set the scene, we were playing Uno, catchphrase, I'm doing Spanish homework, there's a bag of Takis in the corner, we're living our best lives.
Takis.
We might be the stereotypical Latinx community, but we're not doing anything wrong.
Right.
And
we're literally playing Uno, eating chips, and doing
just
homework.
Staying like, up to go home.
Like,
that was
like,
it.
And by all means, I'm not trying to say like, oh, colorblindness, you know, like, but that group of people that want a colorblind America, right, don't necessarily carry out their own actions as if they're colorblind, because at the fact we're doing what college kids do,
right?
You know,
we were literally minding
our eating
business.
Terrible food for ourselves, and playing Uno when some of us should be doing homework.
Right.
And then there's
doing homework.
And then there's the group that's actually doing homework.
I was the one doing homework.
and it's like I don't even think we were speaking Spanish. We might have dropped a word, but
right?
Like
insider discourse words that were not even a full sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so. I just remember having a good ass time playing Uno.
Right.
Like that's my thing.
Right, and catchphrase. That was so fun. But we see kind of like, well, me, I, and another member, Michaela, ends up seeing or just kind of noticing an older white male who was perceived to look like an Army veteran because of the way that he was dressed.
He did look like one.
Yes.
Yeah, his hat didn't have like the
served
in Vietnam War.
Right, exactly. Like, no actual, like, remains of anything, but just his aura and the way that he dressed kind of gave off that impression.
Like, the big, like army green coat and all
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. It was just
kind of like a rugged look.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that might be, like, you know,
I mean, we're totally stereotyping.
Right, exactly.
Like, but, like, it's just the vibe that we get, you
right.
know?
Right. And so he was just kind of looking at us, and I noticed that he was directly across from me, but it's kind of like, you know when you're so uncomfortable that you just pretend that person's not there, making you uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what I was doing. And then he was looking at this supply chain management book. I'll never forget that.
He was looking at that?
He was looking at this book that CN was reading.
Oh.
And
he was kind of eavesdropping on CN's homework.
And he was just kind of seeing like what we were doing. Other members are on their phones, are on FaceTime telling their families, you know, we just got back from USHLI. We had a great time. All this other stuff. So this man had sufficient information to what we think might have brought upon the search for our organization specifically.
Right.
And so that was a key factor into what, like, kind of like a coulda, shoulda, woulda situation, because that's not completely confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was so prevalent, it had to be mentioned multiple times and essential to the story. And so
I mean, he was there. Like,
right. He was the only one that stayed.
Yeah. For all the people that we've talked to, I mean, we had to mention, like, oh, there was an older white male that was literally like
hands folded, nothing with him.
Just literally
just
sitting
staring,
there.
Just staring.
But not even just like in the same cart, but like at the table like next to us and next to every single table. Like he was in a corner to be next to all of us.
Right.
And he wasn't even there the entire trip. Like he literally didn't he come up from like the back of the train or from a different cart to sit next to us?
Yeah, he came from the back when the first stop at Toledo came. And so he moved up from the back.
Mm.
And so then afterwards, after they ask us if we're U.S. citizens specifically, they get off, and then he comes. So me and another member, Michaela, we see him come through the train car, and right before he presses the button to enter into our car again, mm-hmm. he throws his hands up in the air.
Like, what, like does he's disappointed
like
or something?
Like, he's disappointed that we're all there because there were a million seats open. There was no reason for him to be upset.
Yeah.
And we're kind of thinking to ourselves, like, what? Did you just see that? Like,
right.
What?
And if someone wants to say, like, oh, he's disappointed because he wants peace and quiet, then go to your seat. Like, that's why
everyone. But we weren't even talking in that time. We were so shocked.
I'm just saying, like mm-hmm. I'm saying, like, in this setting, like, right. it's a lounge, right? It's mm-hmm. a social space.
Yeah.
For us to people to literally talk and lounge, you know, mm-hmm. not to sleep. Like, dude could have just went back to, I don't know if we're concentrating so much on this dude, but dude could have went back to his seat,
mm-hmm.
right, and just went to sleep if he was right. so mad. So, right. At least from what you're telling me, it mm-hmm. leads me to believe that he was disappointed that we were there.
Exactly, and that he did not get the outcome that he might have wanted if he were the one to call.
Right.
Like, why are they still here? They should have gotten detained
mm-hmm.
type of factor that went into that. And so, that's pretty much what happened, and they asked every single, like, group member that we had on there. And even though I could have easily pulled out my wallet and be like, look, I am a U.S. citizen.
Right.
In that moment, I felt like I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So, I mean.
Right, we were, like, subjected. Mm-hmm. Like, someone somewhere saw us and said, look at these kids.
They're different.
There's something about them.
Yeah.
You know, that we need to ask them that question.
Mm-hmm.
I remember feeling, like, thinking that is, like, I think he was coming back out from your cart back to the front of the train.
Yes.
He passed by me, and I was trying to stay calm, so I got up so I can go fill up my water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got up, I looked behind me, and all I saw were white people on their phones, literally chilling.
Like another day.
Right. Yeah. And they were, like, somewhere on their phones, but other people were, like, literally staring at me wide awake. And mm-hmm. I remember trying to give the benefit of the doubt to the situation, like mm-hmm. maybe someone tried to snitch on us or whatever and someone reported us and they had to do what they had to do, this, is and that, trying to keep myself calm because I was not calm
mm-hmm.
In my head. But mm-hmm. and so one of the excuses I came up with in my head is everyone else that wasn't asked was sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And then just to get up and see everyone awake, it's like, okay, well, that's out the park now.
Right.
You know, yeah. And I look down and see the other Lhasa member that was next to me, like, going through their wallet, pulling out their ID.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why?
Frantic.
Yeah. So, like what? She's feeling frantic, right? But then the people behind me are
not
just
not a
chilling.
Worry in the world. Yeah.
And they didn't even say nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't feel the need to stand up and question the officer to say, why aren't you asking mm-hmm. me?
Why are you
only asking
on this
him?
Train? Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was scared for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
For getting harassed, well, other people that didn't have nothing to worry about had nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I just that's my big takeaway from that. It's mm-hmm. like it was just not, it yeah. wasn't a settling environment whatsoever.
No, and even afterwards, when we were basically debriefing, we were in shock. Some of us were frustrated. Some of us didn't even want to talk about it. And I saw so many different emotions that were physically being like embodied through different members in that cart. I thought it was shocking to see, like, okay, Michaela's upset. Cian doesn't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody's just kind of like, man, that was crazy. Someone pulls out, Marcelo pulls out his joke book, you know, like kind of making like a mockery
yeah.
out of these agents because
right.
how funny. How it's not funny, it's terrible and annoying.
It's pathetic.
And in ways dehumanizing
mm-hmm.
that it's just comical because of how bad it was.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to see everyone go through their different things. But the ways in which the staff acted, the conductors on the train and the personnel.
Oh, yeah, that was important.
That really got to me.
Yep.
That is not something that I'll ever forget. So just for some context, they were doing rounds, kind of just walking through the train, seeing if anybody needed anything, like hour per hour, maybe 2 hours
mm-hmm.
before the actual incident occurred. And then afterwards, I mean, it was like every one to five minutes, there were stewardess, there were like different facilities people just like going in and out, in and out. And I'm just like, man, like why? And of course, every single time that they went through, we would stop talking. And so what if that was their goal? We're not sure. Then there was one woman where she comes to the car and we're talking and she, shh, like that.
Yeah, like and trying very to scare you or something?
Right, very passive aggressive. And then she's like, I'm just kidding, and keeps going. And my heart is literally just like sinking. And I'm just like, this isn't funny. This doesn't feel right.
I can only imagine.
I feel like an outsider. I need to stick with my group. I just felt like this is not right. This is not okay.
I'm going to sound like that person that comes into the store. Like, but we weren't even being treated as customers at that point.
No.
You know, we were like literally being treated as toys.
Yeah.
Or you guys, I should say, because like I was up in the front. Like, yeah. I don't know about you all, but.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that happened.
Yeah, neither can I.
Well, I guess I can, but like I couldn't imagine happening.
When
like,
it happens to you, there. It's different.
Yeah.
For sure. And I've had different run-ins, not specifically with Border Patrol, Highway State Patrol, yes, Cleveland Police, yes, mm-hmm. because of racial profiling. Just one of them.
Well,
was like,
you know what I kind of want to bring up though uh-huh. too is, like, we call it racial profiling, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of white Latinx on that train. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like you and I, yeah, mm-hmm. like we're not like. Someone's not going to look at us and think we're white. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then we have others in our group that clearly have to ask them, like, oh, so, like, what's your ethnicity? You know, mm-hmm. you actually have to ask them. Like, say if you're a white person, they look at another white person.
Mm-hmm.
And it all automatically comes out of the blue, like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm Hispanic. Or, by the way, I'm Latina, Latino, Latinx.
Mm-hmm.
And then that conversation carries on. Like, they're not going to be profiled. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So that's what makes that whole thing interesting is, like, we had black people on with us, brown people, mm-hmm. and white people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mestizo people and all of that. Like, a good mix.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did it happen to all of us? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, none of us passed.
Mm-hmm.
Those that did pass, like, they were asleep, right? Literally mm-hmm. hiding under the coat, so maybe they didn't even see them.
Right.
But, like, those that were awake were asked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why do you think that happened, like, the way that did?
That's a question I'm still trying to figure out. I really
yeah.
don't know, and I don't think we'll ever get the answers that we want or need because a lot of companies, whether it's Border Patrol, whether it's Amtrak, they do the neither confirm nor deny type thing.
Or departments, you meant to say that.
Right, departments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever really know. And one thing that I requested, a part of our Senator Sherrod Brown, was, what is the tactic? What is the technique? What basis do you go off of to ask me that question? And I want to know the truth because right now I'm seeing it as I look different, so you're asking me. That's discrimination. That's wrong.
Yeah.
That's not how that's supposed to happen. So please change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Please give me different words to let me know that, no, it actually happened because of this. And whenever I hear somebody say, oh, it's their job, they're allowed to. No, you don't. No, you don't. We're students from John Kerr University. We're successful in many different ways. For you to think that we're trying to do something wrong because we're just living our lives, you know, you have no context. You have no proof. So when you ask me if I'm a U.S. citizen and I'm going to say yes and I'm a little taken aback by it,
right?
It's because I didn't feel like one in that moment. So.
Yeah. Like, I remember when we got back, we were talking to Gloria, right? Our
mm-hmm.
advisor.
Yeah.
She was so fired up about it, like, because that stuff that she left, wasn't she in New Mexico, right? Yeah, she was. She went to school in New Mexico, so her being Mexican herself,
mm-hmm.
and in that I don't know, is that considered the South? It's southern United States, like, but in the area where Mexico borders and all that type of stuff,
mm-hmm.
discrimination there is like very very bad, like I imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she dealt with it. She fought against it. Throughout her entire career. And so for her to hear about that to, like, kids in Cleveland, you know
right.
what I'm saying? Like, for it to happen in Toledo, like, the city over.
Yeah.
It's got to be ridiculous as an advisor to hear that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just really, it's really unnerving. So, like, some of the stuff that we did when we got back, what do you think? Do you feel okay about some of the stuff that we did?
I feel like a lot of things were open-ended, and I'll never truly feel that questioning feeling. I don't know. I just feel like we did a lot, right? So we did a story with the Cleveland Scene that got a lot of publicity that I wasn't even expecting.
Right. I didn't expect it.
Right.
I was like, who cares about John Carroll? Like,
right. I was like,
but
no.
A lot of people care about John Carroll, apparently.
Right.
Yeah.
And then John Carroll, I started to care about John Carroll students. I mean, I'm saying that they didn't do that before, but we were on a campus story, and that was very interesting to see because
yeah,
our faces
right.
were on there.
And that was a pretty easy process. I mean,
right.
the kids that are, I should stop saying kids. the students, you know, that because I'm assuming myself, who am I calling other people kids? I think I look at myself as a kid sometimes.
That fifth year senior vibe, that's what that is.
I want to feel young, right? Like, that's literally where that comes from. But, like, yeah, I mean, they were pretty easy about, like, publishing that story. Like,
yeah.
Same thing with Cleveland Scene.
Like, we did not have to pull teeth.
No. Literally, no. Like, I remember I put out the Twitter thread, and it got, like, hundreds of likes and retweets and stuff, and dude from Cleveland Scene reaches out and wants to write an article about it. Like, that right. was, like, fairly easy. I think people like mm-hmm. noise.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, like, things that – what do we do to really make a change? You know what I'm saying? I think
right.
we have to ask ourselves that.
Right.
You know?
And I think our biggest attempt was coming in contact with our government relations here at John Carroll and then trying to reach out to our senator
mm-hmm.
and then meeting with their personnel. And
which we did.
Right. Right. Which we did. And that was actually just Carlos and I. Because we decided to be representatives for the group as other members were internalizing it, and
mm-hmm.
we did what we thought was best. And so
Shout out to RTA, by the way. I was late to that meeting, but I still got there, so it was all right.
He came through just in time. and they were very cordial. I mean, they empathized with us. However, I feel as students, the biggest thing that I said in one of these stories was, we need to keep talking. And that is the biggest thing that we can do is just keep talking about the issues that surround these things. Because
yeah.
I wish I could flip the world around and do these awesome things that people do all the time all over. But in the position that I'm at right now, when I'm a full-time student, I'm doing a lot. It's not an excuse. It's just saying, like, I just need to talk about it. That's the
yeah.
one thing. Keep filling people's ears up. If they get tired of it, keep going. Keep doing it. Whether that's on Twitter. I love Twitter.
Yeah.
Whether that's on Twitter, Instagram, you know, Tumblr, like whatever you got, just use it because those are powerful tools of media that do so much.
Right.
And yeah.
A lot of people criticize, like, quote, Twitter activists, unquote, you know, sometimes justly so. Because, I mean, some people, they don't put, like, they hide their face, right? And they talk about mm-hmm. a bunch of issues, right? But not necessarily go out into their own communities
right.
and do something about
right.
it, right? Like, what structural change? But then you have to kind of consider, like, do these people have the means to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then someone can say, well, you should make your means. Yeah, I mean, I agree to that with an extent. But,
mm-hmm.
like, some people can't afford to do that. Like,
right.
the undocumented community, you know? There's a lot mm-hmm. of people in the, in you can say, the DACA community, right? They come
mm-hmm.
out and say, like, undocumented and unafraid.
Yeah.
So this may seem a little controversial, you know, but, like, if you have DACA, you're not undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have a document to be here.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so you can't get deported for saying, like, something that's completely legal. You know, like if maybe you can, but if you can, it's wrong. But you know what I'm saying? Like, this
yeah.
is where my mindset's at. If you have documents to be here, your risk of being deported is significantly less than someone that does not have DACA.
Right.
Maybe their parents or someone that they know, someone that doesn't have that piece of paper that says you're allowed to be here in the United States
mm-hmm.
under our jurisdiction.
Right.
They can't go out and say, like, I'm unafraid. I'm undocumented. I'm unafraid. Like,
they're going to hide. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they seriously don't have a choice to do something
mm-hmm.
about that. And if they do, by God, they literally are unafraid. And they're
mm-hmm.
doing, like, really good work.
I mean,
like,
just,
but
just, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think when people ask me, at least, about what happened, no one's asking, but yeah, I'm saying for, like, context purposes, we almost have an obligation to talk about what happened to us.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly.
when it comes up, we can't back down about it.
Right.
It happened to us.
Right.
It's our experience that happens to people that could have gone a lot worse for them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's where my headspace is at.
Yeah. Rightfully so. Everyone has taken it in a different way. And, I mean, you have to remember, there were at least 13 people.
Yeah.
And it never died. Like, I always was afraid that the story was going to die or something like that. No, it's
yeah.
it's literally with me. It's a part of who I am. It's a history.
How are you handling it?
At first, I was very on edge when I came back to campus. I was very paranoid and things like that. And then I was emotional. And then it kicked in. It was like, all right, advocacy mode 1,000. Like, let's go and set the world on fire. Let's take care of this. Let's do what we got
to
do.
What was the change that got you to that mindset?
Oh, man. I think it was just different support groups that knew. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
the people who actually experienced it, because my best friend Marlene was on that train as well. And
former vice president.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Everybody that we're mentioning is heavily involved with Last Life. You have not picked up the theme yet. And people like that, people like my sisters, and my mom has a very different view of it because it's so normalized from where she's from in El Salvador.
Right.
And so that's a different thing, but I think
Let's talk about that a little bit, too. We'll get there, but let's talk about that a little too.
Okay, and just dealing with it, I was very, like, my phone was buzzing in class every single day. Like, whether it was GroupMe, whether it was, we almost did an in-camera, in-studio live interview with a news station. What was it? Who was it? Kevin Barry, ABC5.
Yeah, I think
5.
That's what his name was.
I forget. And we rejected it because it was a little too much. It was too much. And we wanted to say our story in a different way.
It was too much for reasons.
Right.
For reasons.
And I just dealt with it the best way that I knew how. I took it day by day. It was really hard at first because I could not sleep, could not eat, versus somebody else who went through the same exact experience and it was like totally fine. I was like, yeah, that happened. And that was it. But for me, it was just kind of like... This wasn't my first time, but I'm stuck. I don't know what to do. But now I feel like I do.
Yeah. And a while ago, you brought up the point, you know, like we're full-time students, so we don't necessarily have – I'm not a full-time student, but at the time I was. But like – no, was I? No, I wasn't.
No, you were
this
not.
This was this semester, right?
Yeah.
Dang. Oh, my gosh.
Life happens. Life hits you fast.
Either way, I work. So like
– That's right.
Yeah. So like I don't necessarily – we – I don't know, man. I feel so selfish, like, coming up with excuses. Like, because people literally go out and make sacrifices, right? Even, like, I know I just, like, I don't want to come off like I was roasting the DACA people, right? Or the people that, the whole undocumented, unafraid movement. I'm not trying to roast it, right? But even them, like, they have made their own sacrifices, right? They could jeopardize their status in this country going out and talking about the issue that directly affects their lives.
I mean, just one example is Jose Antonio Vargas.
Right.
And that's, like, a completely different circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And even one time when he came to John Carroll, literally said, I called Homeland Security. And I said, why haven't you deported me yet? And the woman told me on the phone.
I remember that.
Right, and the woman told me on the phone, I don't think you know what you're doing. I'm going to hang up right now. Have a good day. And, like, that was it. So people who like that make it.
Seriously.
Somehow, some way make it. But for those who are undocumented and extremely afraid, I believe that I can try to be a small, very minuscule stepping stone for them.
Right.
Because go ahead, test me. Like, I have my license. You know, I was born on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
So let me speak for those issues.
Kind of sort of going off track to a different topic, but still relevant to what we're talking about. Parents, right?
Yes.
Like, the whole, I think what resonates most, you know, is, okay, I wouldn't consider myself religious, right? But I am, I don't know. I still identify with the religion just because it's culture, right? I don't know, but... Mm-hmm. I just say that as a preface to where my headspace is. I'm not trying to give value to his religious influence, but his social influence, Monsignor Romero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Romero, like, said something very important, you know, while he was still alive, is like, you know, when they kill me or when I die, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, my blood will live on, you know, with the rest of El Salvador. Something along the lines of that. I thought that lives on with me because it's like, I'm Salvadoran, right? And he literally, like he started off as very conservative, right? So didn't want to have anything to do with anything with the social issues that were going on during the war. And then he kind of just did a whole switch, right? So I'm not saying I relate to that, but I respect that he did that. Now, something else that he said, though, too, is what he learned when he started immersing himself with the communities is he realized that he's the voice of the voiceless, right?
Right.
That's the nickname that he was given by the community. He is the voice of the voiceless, where people have been oppressed of their voice to a point that they can die, you know, if they say something, right? And same thing that goes for him, too, but he was on a platform. He used this platform to uplift the voices of those that couldn't say anything.
Right.
And so I think that kind of relates to what we were talking about, you know, people who are afraid or cannot afford to speak out about the issues that they face, they can literally face death, you know? Like, we almost have an obligation to be that voice, you know? So
for sure.
I think with older generations from El Salvador, the violence that they have seen is so on a different level. Like, even as it stands today, it's like on another level.
Right.
Where what happened to us is minuscule. Mm-hmm. Like, it's routine. It's normalized
right.
in their country. I think, I don't know what to think, what happened to us, and then compare it to something that happened to them. Like, what do you think?
Going back to your point about parents and that as well, when my mom first heard about it and we were texting our little family group message, at first and the days afterwards, my mom is from El Salvador and she came when she was a teenager fleeing from the war there.
Mm-hmm.
For her, it was very normalized. She was like, well, one time we were on the bus and they took my friend's purse or they took my sister's purse and never gave it back to her. I'm like, Mom, why didn't you like say something? She's like, why would I? Like, that's dumb.
Right.
And so a lot of the times when she's either racially profiled herself or discriminated against, she's very calm, like, because she's so used to it, mm-hmm. as many people of color here in the United States are today. When you get so many microaggressions thrown at you, you become numb, unfortunately. But like you said, when it happens to us, it was different because we might not face that reality every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my dad has faced his own implicit bias that people have projected on him, being Puerto Rican and being mistaken for being like Middle Eastern and things like that. But relating back to my mom and for her own like Salvadorian heritage, it's very normalized. It's something that she's always been kind of socialized into.
Yeah.
It was never like a question. It was like, well, yeah, of course they're going to do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're agents.
It kind of puts into perspective, like, here as Americans, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We have high expectations of the society that we want to live in, mm-hmm. right? And that we're told that we are living in.
Mm-hmm.
But those things aren't necessarily true all the time.
Right.
You know, never really true, ever.
Yeah.
So how do you think you go forward from this, like about the train incident?
Going forward, there were instances in which, like, for example, we had a regular Tuesday night meeting and an unannounced visitor came from like a local Cleveland like protesting like company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't there for that, but I saw the GroupMe message.
But going forward from here, this man sits down, he's like, "All right, we're going to protest. We're going to come in hot. We're going to do this." And in that moment, everybody was mentally, physically and emotionally drained from the actual incident that we weren't ready to go in guns blazing.
Uh-huh.
And so I think we've manifested ourselves to work towards a greater common good by just talking about it, like I mentioned before, writing it somewhere, documenting it. And one thing that I will most definitely never forget and incorporate from this is an internship that I'm doing with the Center for Student Diversity and Inclusion called a Know Your Rights campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And that aligns with every single thing that we went through. Knowing your rights and being educated about them is so vital to the way that you live your life.
Right.
Whether you're white, brown, or black, like, you need to know why you're being stopped. You need to know what can you do in those moments when you are. And it's not about behavior. It's literally just about educating yourself and knowing what to do in those situations. So going from there, what I did was a Know Your Rights meeting. I passed out different cards that are like literally fold out in a pamphlet if they come in your house or if they come to your house.
Right.
If they stop you at your workplace or look for you at your workplace, if they stop you in your car. And especially as college students, like moving forward, we come here for education. We literally are sponges that absorb knowledge in order to be better citizens of
right.
society.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my main goals is to just educate. That's the biggest thing that I could say is educate, because
yeah.
it's the one thing that I can do right now. But yeah.
Something that I heard a lot about, like, people are so proud of how we acted, right, on the train. You know,
yeah.
like, we responded, like, oh, yeah,
ooh,
we
said yes.
yes. Like, oh, my God, like, yeah.
How did you know how to do that?
It's
and I'm like,
yo,
bitch, when you were in the
right, like, I don't. So, but it that kind of, like, plays into something that it can be toxic, you know?
Yes.
When people say, oh, you should have acted this way, or it's probably good you acted this way, if it's for your survival, yeah, I get it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at all times, I feel like the proper way or the more constructive way to really address things is by saying, oh, it's good that you acted within your rights.
Mm-hmm.
You have to act within your rights. You know, if you have a right to do something,
mm-hmm.
it's probably good you acted within your rights. So, like, say if I would have said, oh, yeah, I'm not going to answer your question,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then came back to Carol and then, you know, and then a big show happened, you know, on the train and it got back to Carol. People wouldn't have said, oh, it's good that you acted that way.
Right.
You know,
even though people will tell
us differently.
Even though
it would have been within my rights. Yeah. You know, like, it was in my it would have been within my rights to not answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because technically, I didn't have to answer that question.
Right.
There was no reasonable suspicion that I was committing a crime whatsoever. I'm a citizen, number one. Number two is I wasn't doing anything. I was literally sitting in my seat about to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if a Border Patrol officer was to come up to me and say, are you a U.S. citizen? And I said, I'm not going to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
Then they asked for my ID. And I told them, I'm not going to give you my ID. Why do you want my ID? They said, oh, well, you know, we think this, this, and that. Oh, now you're going to be detained. Why am I being detained?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I can act that way. I could have put up a big show, but I didn't for reasons.
Right.
You know, but if I were to act that way, people wouldn't have been proud of me.
No.
Coming back to Cleveland, the school wouldn't have been proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been embarrassed, right, because we're not acting good, right? But the point is that people need to learn how to act within their rights.
Exactly.
You know, because if you want to survive in this society—
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we have a constitution, right, that's designed to protect, quote, all people's rights.
Mm-hmm.
All people need to be granted those rights. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I could have, it would have been different if I would have said, oh, I plead the Fifth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Fifth, like, it's not going to be self-incriminating. It would have been my First Amendment right to not answer that question. I'm glad that you guys are really going about this whole, like, Know Your Rights campaign. You said it was by CSDI, right?
No, it's actually just me. It's like an it's my internship.
I thought you said it's with CSDI.
No,
okay.
But I did do a meeting for LASA with the same theme, which sparked the offer for an internship.
Oh, okay.
To me, if
so
that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah,
it started with LASA. I was contacted by Salo to do an internship.
Oh, okay. So that's
as
where that
a spinoff fruit to engage. Not only the JC community,
yeah,
but the University Heights / Cleveland community.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, cool.
I'm pumped for it.
What support have you seen, like, from the school, like, in terms of, like, this whole situation?
So we met with different people that I don't remember. A lot of people that are with John Carroll in events like these. And because of the situation and how we gracefully handled it and the way that we carried ourselves, we went in for a meeting, we talked to them, and they asked us, what do you want? And so we said, well, we want like an apology at least. And so one of our advisors, I guess you could say, was like, we want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We want this, that.
Mm.
And you could just see the looks on different people's faces, like, oh, no. Like, no. Like, we're here to pat you on the back. We're here to say we're here for you. We are here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, let us know what you want to do. And we're just like, okay, this is what we want to do. And then they were just kind of like, all right, bet. See you later. So
I remember feeling like they almost wanted to turn the situation into something for their own benefit.
Right. And so the reason why we met with them in the first place is because I will be frank. This is my experience. This is my truth. And so I'm going to put it just like that.
Okay.
Is because we're John Carroll students. And that's who they represent, not because of the discrimination at hand.
Yeah.
Not because Latinx students were targeted. It was because John Carroll students were targeted. Mm-hmm. And this will receive attention. Therefore, we are the gladiators of John Carroll. Those people were the gladiators and still are.
Yeah.
And it's about media representation and saving face. And that's not insulting them in any single way whatsoever. That is their job. That is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Kudos to them. But a part of my own perspective was, how are you really going to help us?
Right.
Because we are young, we are students, we are professional in every which way you as an institution have taught us to be.
Mm-hmm.
So as the administration, that was something that we struggled with a little bit because, I mean, I personally did not see as many results as I would have liked to. But the feeling of solidarity was there. It just wasn't there to show for it, in my opinion.
The whole, quote, solidarity was there, but, like, the result was nothing.
Right.
Or almost nothing. I don't know.
Right, because the only one that we actually did get from JC personnel was meeting with Kate Malone.
Yeah.
And the...
She was really supportive, though.
Exactly. And I'm very thankful for her and the people who reached out to us to, you know, contact her. I'm thankful for that aspect. Could more have been done? Maybe.
For sure.
Maybe, for sure.
Uh-huh.
But we are where we stand, and yeah. Ain't that about a bitch? Like, here we are just talking about it. Like,
right.
It happened, period. Uh-huh. It's a history.
So, like you said, it's so much different when you go through something.
Mm-hmm.
instead of just observing something.
Right, right. And of course, I know one member was saying, I've never gone through that before because where I come from, a million people look like me.
Yeah.
But here, something struck me as different, and it was a pin drop of a characteristic. It wasn't even anything too out of the box or whatever the Eurocentric version is out of the box, per se.
Right, right.
And so that was very important to see how people in the group reacted. Because to me, I'm like, again? Again? Really? I haven't seen this since I was younger. And, like, do you mind if I talk about that just, like, a little bit?
Go ahead.
Okay, so...
that's fine.
I think I was maybe 10 or 12, and we were going to the IX Center. And so Priscilla had just gotten her new car, my older sister, and my younger sister was there, and one of her friends. And not one, not two, but three state highway patrol SUVs cornered us on the highway as we're all driving together. And
Why were you driving?
Like, while my older sister was driving.
Like, literally, like, did some Fast and Furious stuff, like, surrounded your
car. The only way that I could refer to it as, like, the O.J. Simpson, like, running in the Bronco, right? All right. And so me and my sisters, we're like, you must be tripped. Like, what is going on? And eventually they ease away. As we exit to the Ag Center, they just fell away like nothing.
Wow.
And in that moment, it's wow. Now it's wow. But when I was younger, I was like,
Right.
Let's go ride some rides.
It's not like, wow, that was awesome. It's like,
It was interesting. And then when I was involved with retreats at my high school, we were coming back from one, and my father had picked us up from camp, and we were going back home. It was in our 1997 Toyota Corolla Red, and a policeman with no lights on was just following us. And our neighborhood was very lonely at that time. It was very dark, and... the police just following us, and then they stopped us.
What neighborhood was it?
Cleveland.
Okay.
My neighborhood.
What neighborhood?
Oh, like Slavic Village.
Oh, Slavic. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Sorry. I was like so used to saying like, like my place, like my street.
Yeah.
But Slavic Village, that area by CCC, the Cleveland Central Catholic
High
School.
Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah.
And so.
I just want to give some context to listening. Like if people are listening in Cleveland, like, oh, that neighborhood, you know. Okay.
Yeah. And so my dad was pulling out his identification, and the police officer said, oh, is that your green card? And my dad was like,
what?
Yeah, my dad goes like, that's my bank card. That's my Charter One bank card. But here's my license if you wanted to look at it.
A green card's not actually green, is it? I don't think it is.
This man said, is that your green card?
Like,
I don't know what a green card looks like. I'll be honest with you. And I should know how
it is. A green card is just a I don't know. Go ahead.
I'm going to look that up after
this. I'm
going
to look it up right now.
Right
go
now.
Go ahead.
And so my dad was like, he carries himself in such a different way when these things happen. It's not like he laughs about it. It's kind of like, man, like, for real? Like, all right, cool, we'll do this. And so I just remember the flashlight going through the car, even though, like, you know, me and my younger sister, we didn't say anything. But we knew how to compose ourselves. We weren't annoying. We weren't like, what did he ask? Like, how dare he say that? Because we didn't know. But I'll never forget that. And, my dad always reiterates that when these things do happen, watch yourself. Because most, like 9 times out of 10, you're not going to win.
Hmm.
No matter how much you know your rights, which I know is contradicting my previous point. Sadly, that's what it is.
Well, I mean, that's just your first line of defense is knowing like what should be happening and what shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, like how you look is going to play into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or how you sound. You know, if you have an accent. Like the accent, right? Kind of going back to the whole train thing.
Right.
You know,
I
remember in like a previous conversation we didn't have like on the air, right, about this, but you felt like they were almost trying to spark a conversation because they wanted to see if we had an accent.
How could I forget? Yes.
Like that's what you were hypothesizing, right?
Yes. And so what happened with that or what I perceived to have happened was they were trying to crack jokes after they asked us that harrowing question. You know, somebody was playing Uno, and they were like, oh, haha, he has red. And we just nervously laughed. Like,
I would have been so pissed. If I was about to win the game and some freaking Border Patrol agent ruined it for me, I would have been so pissed by the... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. And he was just asking us different questions, like, I forget. It was like, it wasn't like, how you doing, anything like that. It was just like little comments that probably in everyday conversation, I could have been talking just like this.
Uh-huh.
But because... my heart was in my hands. I was like, okay. And then they went to the back of the car. And then, I mean, we were all paralyzed. We were just watching them. And then they went right out. They didn't say have a good night. You know, I'm assuming that, you know, they didn't want to be our friend.
They just bounced.
They just bounced because I felt as if that was a tactic to hear accents, even though there were accents.
I see what you're muffled, getting at.
They were muffled by an accumulative, yes, we are U.S. citizens, just like that. Because I had a feeling that if they did ask, are you a U.S. citizen, one of them says yes, who has an accent, then they'll be like, okay, and then they'll go further.
Right.
But because they answered in a group, it was a different outcome. It was like, let me just keep going.
Right.
Because I had nothing to work
the
with.
The vision I kind of have in my head of that whole situation is like, it's such a fabricated conversation. Like, someone's trying to spark jokes and starting this right. and that, like, trying to talk to you.
It just seems like a technique used, like, okay, this is what you have to do if you want to hear
right.
what they sound
and
like.
And if they were really being genuine, if they were leaving the car, they would have at least said, all right,
have a
good night.
Yeah.
They said, oh, well, shit, like, this didn't work.
Like this is awkward because we didn't get what we needed.
Yeah.
What somebody could have potentially called in for.
Right, and it's scary because, I mean, even my friends, you know, have accents. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And while they are allowed to be in this country, like, mm-hmm. if they were on the train,
yeah.
And they sense the slightest accent, like, they probably could have gotten harassed even farther than or further than we have, you know?
Right, because for sure, our group, we had our certain privileges.
Yeah.
That just got us by.
I mean, we're college kids, you know? Like, right. not a lot of people say they're college kids.
We are college kids.
Yeah. You know, some of us were citizens, other people were residents, other people were international citizens. Like, you know, the fact of the matter is we all had legislation to be there.
Right.
You know, and that in itself is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
If someone else on that Amtrak, and we don't know, I didn't see anyone get taken away, but if someone else on that Amtrak, you know, didn't have papers whatsoever mm-hmm. and didn't have legislation to be in the country,
mm-hmm.
like, so yeah. it's just scary to think about what could have happened. Like, what mm-hmm. if this happened? So, from a whole situation, what do you conclude?
What do I conclude? That's interesting. One thing that I learned specifically after this was to be unapologetically myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as I talked about that before, you have to feel that. And so I know who I am. I reaffirm that every day. And because of that incident, which it said that it took that incident for me to realize that, I don't back down. I'm educated. I know when to call out different things, and I know when not to call them and how to do that. I'm strategic than outraged. I used to be upset and not know anything and just want it like, oh, that's wrong, period, done. But now it's like,
mm-hmm.
how do I, it's not the question if this happened, it's how it happened, how can it stop happening? And it's shifting a different mindset of, okay, yeah, this is bad, to what am I going to do about it? What kind of grassroots thing can I do? What kind of thing can I spark from my level with my resources
mm-hmm.
that I can do?
But, how do you think LASA changes as an organization?
We pinpoint the different issues that have affected us and our families and our communities by doing different things. Like when we come back, right, so school's ending now, but when we come back as an organization, it's almost immediately Latinx Heritage Month.
Oh,
and so I think
yeah.
that will be our 4 weeks, our four events, our time to shine.
Yeah.
And that's when we do what
you
we did
plans?
Last year. Right, exactly. We
do,
have plans.
You do have plans.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about them.
Okay.
Though. All
you
right.
See
them.
Surprise,
come out. Come through.
I'll be graduated at the time, but am I still
through.
Allowed to come through?
Oh, of course all you right, are. It's see. Open to the public. Yeah. You know, donate some money. No, I'm playing.
Oh, but you mean that, though.
But low key, you know, come through if you want to come through. And... yeah, so that is definitely our hallmark thing that we're trying to do, and you're just going to have to see.
And you're planning to go to Ushli again?
Of course. Oh, of course. We're not taking the same mode of transportation as per request by our advisor.
Yeah.
But we're not going to stop going because of this.
I mean, why would you? You know?
Exactly.
That just proves that Amtrak is not a safe place for college students to go
right.
to a leadership conference.
Right.
I mean, like, why would that happen? They mm-hmm. complied, right?
So, yeah.
I don't know. All right, everybody. That was Gabby Flores.
She thank
has been
you.
A great guest on the show.
Thank you.
But yeah, all right. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week, all right?
Stay tuned.
Adios.